Yeah, thank you very much. I'm going to talk about the work which is jointly done together with Thomas Spider, who is my PhD student working on that subject, and with Olivier Paul-Louis, who is at the Courant Institute at NYU. And so the idea or the motivation is to extend the classical Rayleigh-Binard convection, incorporate phase changes in the first step, and to study the pattern formation in such a system, eventually perhaps understanding also better what's going on. We have seen already yesterday very nice pictures of cloud formations in Friedrich Busse's talk, and this is for sure a motivation also for our efforts to understand better what's going on there. Yeah, I will give a broader introduction to the context. We'll talk in detail about our model, and then we can study this model in two regimes. One is much closer to the classical Rayleigh-Binard convection, which we call the linearly unstable case. And then we have something which is in atmospheric motion very interesting. It's the so-called conditional instability that basically means that it can be stable or unstable. It just depends on the degree of saturation which you locally have. And I will give a short summary and an outlook. Yeah, let me start with the classical convection. I hope I get this movie run. So this is what we all know. Classical dry Rayleigh-Binard convection, heated from below, cooled from above. And then if the temperature drop is sufficiently large, the turbulent flow evolves inside the layer where the temperature field gets very well mixed. And from this picture, it's actually not too big step to go to moist convection, where we basically include phase changes. When the warm air rises, it expands, the temperature drops, and then a condensate can be formed. And this condensate is then nothing else but a little cloud, which we would have in such a setup. And there are some differences which are coming into the game. And one important thing I want to motivate already now is that due to these phase changes, usually the up-down symmetry is broken in such a system when phase transitions are present. So, as we all know, moist convection exists in our atmosphere. So this is a global picture composing together the liquid water content in the atmosphere from different satellite images. And you see particularly in the equatorial region cloud formations indicated by these white spots. And you can see very nicely that these clouds appear and disappear rather quickly and form very small scale patches. In terms of the global atmospheric dynamics, clouds are really a small scale and a fast process, which has to be incorporated when you are interested in the large scale circulations. And that is exactly the problem. The problem is that these processes on these small time and space scales contribute pretty much, for instance, to the radiative budget, have to be incorporated, have to be parameterized in causal models. And this causes clouds to be one of the biggest uncertainties for more reliable prognosis of the climate change. There are many types of moist convection and also cloud patterns. And there is, for instance, the classification into deep and shallow convection. Deep convection is what we would observe in the equatorial regions. We have huge cloud towers up to 10 kilometers in height. And these structures formed and they are correlated to large-scale circulations like the Hadley cells. And then there are low clouds, which you see, for instance, here, which preferentially form over the subtropics. And these are exactly the objects we will be interested in. As you can imagine, to understand and to describe these kind of clouds, you have to incorporate effects of compressibility, because pressure and temperature all significantly vary over such a height. For such low clouds, the Businesque approximation, which we are all familiar with in convection, works actually still pretty well. And as I said already, these are the objects we will be interested in the following, these low clouds. And why? Well, these low clouds in particular over oceans are usually do not rain necessarily. So we have droplet number densities of 75 up to 200 per cubic centimeter. This is a typical number, so that's not too much. And since these clouds are low and warm, they can emit more infrared radiation than higher clouds, which are colder. And you can imagine, in particular over an ocean, this has a tremendous impact on the radiation budget. So it makes a big difference if this area is cloud-free or completely covered by clouds. Just to give you a number, which I took from this very nice book, which appeared recently, a 2 to 3% increase of the cloud fraction results in 1 watt per square meter change in the net solar radiation. And just keep in mind that the total incoming is something like, so if you're taking an average, global average is 342. So if you here go from 0 to 100%, it's already a significant fraction. And this makes it particularly interesting and important to understand better what's going on also with these low clouds, which are not so easy to measure because they are, as you can see, rather fine in their structure, and only recently people really get a better access to these clouds in field measurement campaigns. So it is clear that in the atmospheric science community, many people have studied this, and there are all kind of approaches. And usually, if you are interested in predicting weather phenomena, etc., you have to stick as close as possible to reality, and that means you have to model the full complexity of the problem as good as possible, and that brings you to incorporate subgrid scale models for the turbulence and also cloud parameterizations of the microphysics. You are unable to resolve the smallest scales. You are left with large eddy simulations or even coarser approaches like Reynolds averaged Navier-Stokes equations. Just to give you an idea, the Rayleigh number is about 10 to 15 in atmospheric dynamics, and the aspect ratios go up to 1,000 for if you are interested in mesoscale dynamics. This is certainly not what we want to do. Our motivation was coming from dry Rayleigh-Binard convection, where we learned a lot over the last years, extend this and proceed with a reduced complexity, but rely on direct numerical simulations. So that means the turbulence is fully resolved. And as we all know, if we go with DNS, we will be limited in the Rayleigh numbers to, that's what the maximum what we could get, 10 to 8. And the maximum aspect ratios we could study is something like 64, but certainly not at Rayleigh 10 to 8. So we all know that. We have to make these compromises. Nevertheless, it allows us to systematically vary parameters like the Rayleigh number, as we will see, and to study moist Rayleigh-Binard convection in these shallow layers. So what does that mean? That means we have to go through a sequence of approximations in our model. And the first who discussed this in very much detail for a particular case was Chris Bretherton, 20, almost 30 years ago. And, 25 years ago. And we basically, in a similar way, set up our model. Let me explain this a little bit step by step, such that you get an idea what we are really doing and what we are throwing away in terms of the complexity. So if we have the volume forcing term, which is added to the momentum balance, for such a problem, the density would be a function of the entropy in the atmosphere. We are mostly studying adiabatic processes, so we are taking the entropy instead of the temperature, or you take the potential temperature, which would be exactly the pendant to the entropy pressure. We have the three components of, we have vapor, we have liquid water, and we even have ice. And the first step is, I said already, maritime low clouds are usually ice-free, so we can forget about the ice, which actually is a big problem. Much more complicated ice nucleation and ice dynamics in clouds than liquid water dynamics, but we are skipping that. And we are allowing for no rain. That means vapor and liquid water can be converted into each other. There is latent heat release, etc. But in total, they remain conserved. So we are left with these quantities after these two steps. Entropy, total water mixing ratio, and pressure. Then we are translating the pressure dependence into a height dependence in the Boussinesq approximation. We are using the buoyancy, which is basically a deviation from the hydrostatic profile, measuring a small deviation instead of the density itself. And then we would be left with this term, which has to be added to the Navier-Stokes equations to the right-hand side as a driving term, driving the fluid motion. And now we are doing a further step. We are approximating the thermodynamics on both sides of the phase boundary in the unsaturated and in the saturated one by piecewise linear relations, piecewise linear functions of QT and S at a given height Z. And this is a further approximation. I'm coming back to that on the next slide. I just want to mention that this now also implies that we are having no supersaturation in our system. And having no supersaturation in the system is not a too bad approximation, because in the atmosphere, the supersaturation usually does not go beyond 1%. And that is simply because we have the so-called heterogeneous nucleation process in the atmosphere, which is present since there are aerosol particles everywhere, and there are always potential candidates for forming cloud water droplets. Yeah, and that is a it is different if you would have homogeneous nucleation, where you would have where you would need a much higher supersaturation. But in the atmosphere, something beyond 1% supersaturated is rarely observed. So that's why such a bulk condensation scheme is not a too bad approximation, and it is used not only here in our case, but also in many other instances. Just for convenience reasons, we are recombining these two variables, adiabatic invariance QT and S, by two new variables, which basically are a dry and a moist component in our field. So why is this approximation not too bad? So these are data, real data, of the specific volume as a function of the entropy and the total water content at a given pressure. And you see indeed that this is the phase boundary, the dashed line, that on both sides of the phase boundary, these functions show a nearly linear behavior. So this approximation is not too bad, which we are using here. And it means that these values which I have given here are constants. It also means, or it is clear that they cannot be equal, because otherwise we wouldn't have any latent heat release in our system. So so it's a piecewise linear function which we are discussing here, and I have just given the relation here once more at the low end. So now let's set up the model. This is what we all know from our dry classical Rayleigh-Binard case. We have our layer. We are prescribing a temperature or a D field, a dry buoyancy field, fixing these amplitudes to D0 and DH. If there is no fluid motion, we have just a linear diffusion profile. We have our Businesque equations, where the buoyancy couples in, which would be in this case D. And we have an equation which I have written here in the fluctuations about this linear profile, D prime, and that brings an additional driving term to these scalar fluctuations, which is given here. So this is what we know quite well from the dry convection case, and this is how it looks like for the moist case. We have these two fields, D and M, which contribute at each grid point, at each time instant, differently to the buoyancy, and which both are described by these advection diffusion equations, and the rule which connects these two with the buoyancy is given by this relation. I'm coming to that a little bit later. So now we prescribe both fields at the top and at the bottom plane. And with this condition, which basically tells you if you are locally saturated or subsaturated, you are now able to tune all kinds of initial equilibrium states in your system, partly saturated, unsaturated, fully unsaturated, fully saturated. I will come back to these things during my talk frequently, so keep this in mind, that we have these four amplitudes at the top and at the bottom, which prescribe the initial state, which we then perturb and then follow in the non-linear turbulent evolution. A few words to this saturation condition, which basically would be an implicit relation. So what you usually have to do is you have to solve such an implicit relation which connects M, D, and Z. And just by a few considerations which are a consequence of our linearization, you figure out that the saturation condition has to be such a linear relation in our system. We have constructed our fields in such a way that these partial derivatives of the buoyancy with respect to M at a fixed dry buoyancy are unity. On that case, it would be zero, because you are in the saturated part of the phase plane. And so by a consideration of two air parcels which are right at the saturation line, and which you want to, so you want to go from this one to the other state, and you can go over these two ways, you basically come up with a relation that this buoyancy difference has to be the same as the one which you get from pass one, which brings you to this relation, and that means there is everything is determined by this function, which is a linear function, and what enters here is the is a Brunt-Weissalla frequency, which basically in this case connects the dry adiabatic lapse rate and the moist adiabatic lapse rate. These are basically the rates at which the temperature would vary with height, the mean temperature would vary with height in a fully saturated and in a fully unsaturated area. In a fully saturated regime, the temperature decreases slower because you have permanent latent heat release as in a dry atmosphere. So, yeah, so we have plugged this set of equations into a very simple geometry, periodic sidewalls in the x and y direction, free slip boundaries at the top and at the bottom, basically motivated by these two classical studies from Kuo. There are two papers appeared in Telos. One is 61 and the later one is at 65, and also Chris Bretherton's original studies were in this setup. And so it's clear other boundary conditions are possible, but for now we are sticking with this very simple case just to get our studies started. If you are expressing everything in characteristic units, you come up with five parameters. We have a Prandtl number, and for simplicity, I just want to remind that we are taking the same diffusivities for the dry and the moist buoyancy. One could, in principle, even formulate these diffusivities in different, have different amplitudes, which would give you even one more parameter, a moist and a dry Prandtl number. But for simplicity, and because in reality, I think that is a good approximation, we are sticking with one Prandtl number. We have two Rayleigh numbers for the dry and for the moist field, defined in similar way. And then we have two more parameters, which basically describe nothing else but the amount of liquid water which we are putting into the bottom and into the top plane, yeah, and which is sustained. And this is given as a consequence of this saturation condition by these two parameters. Five parameters is a mess, as you can imagine, in particular if you want to do numerical simulations. Well, we have we stick with the Prandtl number of 0.7, and for the rest of our studies, we are always keeping that parameter to zero, which means the parcels which start at the bottom are neither saturated nor unsaturated, and so we are keeping them right at the threshold. That means we are left with three parameters, and as you see, they are not really independent of each other. If you're varying these Rayleigh numbers, it certainly has an impact also on this liquid water amount which you prescribe at the top. These prescribed amplitudes of D and M at the top and at the bottom determine also the amount of potential energy which can be converted into fluid motion. This is the so-called CAPE, convectively available potential energy, which is in our model defined in such a way. So we have the potential energy in the background equilibrium, and we have a potential energy of an air parcel that starts at the bottom of the layer. And for simplicity, we are just taking D0, M0 to 0. We can just fix these amplitudes. It's just the difference that matters between the top and the bottom values. And then we can derive conditions in which cases can we, in general, observe convection at all. And we have to distinguish two cases which follow directly from the saturation condition. So the equilibrium is fully subsaturated if the mean background, the moist background profile, is everywhere smaller than the dry profile. And that gives you exactly such a relation. You want to have cape larger zero that you can extract motion out of the system. And it means, translated in simple words, it means just if that field is too strong, stably stratified, you won't have a hard time to, or there's no possibility to gain motion out of the system. In the saturated case, it means that the background field M, the moist buoyancy field, is everywhere larger than the dry field. This relation is just given here, and that means MH has to be smaller than zero, which will always be the case in our consideration. So the moist field will always be unstably stratified. That is always negative, so this is not a real helpful condition, but I'm coming back to that condition in a minute, because this is exactly what we are doing. We are changing the stratification of the dry field, keeping the moist field always unstable. And this brings us from one regime, the linearly unstable, to the conditionally unstable regime. Should be the next slide. Yes, here. I have summarized what I just said before. So the cape will be negative if we are having exactly this relation, which I just gave on the last slide. And the cape can be positive. And then we basically operate in two big regimes of this, our convection model, the linearly unstable regime, where both fields are unstably stratified. So that means DH and MH are negative. And this is close, much closer, as we will see, to the classical Rayleigh-Binard convection. And the interesting regime is this one. Because in that case, the dry air in our layer is stably stratified, the moist air not. That means the moist air wants to become unstable, wants to initiate motion, convective motion, but it has to push aside the stably stratified air. And that's exactly what's going to be observed in, very frequently in the atmosphere. And I will talk a little bit later about that in more detail. There is a kind of Rayleigh number which you can basically associate with this stability boundary, and it looks very much like the Rayleigh number which we had in Hubert Klaas talk on the accretion disk. So again, a Brunt-Vassala frequency appears here. So let me just mention that in both regimes we can set up fully saturated equilibrium states and unsaturated equilibrium states. And this is exactly what we also did. And let me in brief only go over this linearly unstable case, which is this part of the parameter plane. So we have a dry Rayleigh number larger zero and a moist Rayleigh number larger zero. And here are the two cases. The two cases, initial cases, illustrated, the fully saturated and the fully subsaturated case. And you are going from one to the other, which would mean by just reducing the amount of liquid water at the top, which is somehow reasonable. And that means basically that in this case, as you can see, in the unsaturated case, MH is always smaller than DH minus. So the profile for the moist field is the red one, is always smaller than the one for the dry case. In the other case, it's just the other way around. We have studied this regime in very detail, and you see, if you are just taking, for instance, the mean profiles of the dry and the moist field separately, these profiles look exactly like what you see in dry convection. Yeah, you have a boundary layer, you have a well-mixed profile in the center, and you have another boundary layer. And the resulting profile is the B profile, which is determined by these two other profiles, now basically crosses over from the dry to the moist case, and this crossover can be tuned by exactly this parameter, which determines the degree of saturation. So the dry profile, the B profile for the actual buoyancy field which we have in our simulation, starts as a dry one and then crosses over to the moist one. And if this parameter is larger than zero, it always means there's water. There's an amount of water at the top plane sustained. If it is negative, the situation is different, as you can see. We have a slow crossover to the saturated case here in this particular parameter setting. You can also discuss this issue in terms of the convective heat transfer, which is given by this function, UZ, correlated with the corresponding buoyancy field. In our model, it is bounded between the fully saturated and the fully unsaturated case. And this gives you an idea about the transport. Well, we know this classical picture where the positive correlation between these quantities means that hot stuff is moved upwards, or cold stuff in the same sense is moved downwards. So, and now you see again, you're tuning these parameters, and your profile, your actual profile, which characterizes the convective buoyancy flux, switches between the completely unsaturated case and the completely saturated case, which is the dotted and the dashed line. And if you want to get an idea of the additional amount of heat which is transported due to the latent heat release, it's basically this area which I have marked here in blue. You see also in the case where this parameter is negative, you will never make it to the fully saturated reference case, which is here the case. And that means loosely basically that we will have a closed cloud layer here in this area, and here we will always have isolated clouds in our system. And this is what we have studied in very large aspect ratio systems. This is a view from the top where we basically integrated the liquid water content in the layer. And you see these isolated clouds here, and you see a nearly closed cloud layer here. And just to give you an idea about the aspect ratio, this little cube here is an aspect ratio 1 cell, and this is an aspect ratio 8 cell, which indicates that if you are interested in studying these cloud patterns, you really have to go to large aspect ratios, which make the whole study quite expensive. Okay, let me switch to the next case. And the next case is the conditional unstable equilibrium. And we will be here in this part of our parameter plane. Everything I said so far was that part, and now we will be in this part of the parameter plane. And as I said, the dry field is always stably stratified. So at the top, the amplitude is larger than at the bottom for all three cases. But now you can change the degree of stratification of the dry field, and this brings you moving around in this parameter plane here. And there's one case again where the whole layer is neither saturated nor subsaturated, and this is exactly the case which basically was studied in all these classical works. I'm just mentioning a few of them here. This conditionally unstable regime is, there's a very nice paper, a very old paper by Gyakness on that subject, and I actually would like to talk a little bit more in detail about that, because it demonstrates very nicely what is the consequence in terms of the structures we will observe in this conditionally unstable regime. And he is just discussing this regime in a very simple model for cumulus convection, and this model can demonstrate that we basically are not able to gain any kinetic energy out of our system if we are not making sure that we will have very small clouds, cloud towers, which have a sufficiently large spacing between them in this layer. So how is that coming? Let me go a little bit more into detail of that model. It's a very simple, crude model. So we have here our little cumulus clouds, and you start with picking a layer of the atmosphere, which is shown here, and you are just taking a very simple balance. So here the moist stuff is moving up, so we have exactly this term, rho times uz times a, which is like a flux, a stream. We have it outside, and for continuity reasons, you're basically coming up with upward moving moist air and downward moving dry air is related to the corresponding velocities. Then you're having very simple heat transport equation or temperature transport equations in both regimes. And again, you see here are coming these so-called lapse rates, the dry and the moist lapse rate into the game. So, and now you are basically, what you're doing is, now you are basically studying a little energy balance in such a simple setting. And so you are asking, what is the heat which is accumulated per second, which is set free by condensation in your atmospheric layer. And then you are starting with the use of these equations to manipulate these two terms, and you're getting basically two contributions. One, which can be considered as a uniform heating of the whole atmosphere, no matter if it is cloudy or if it is not cloudy. And there's a second term, and in the second term you see very nicely there comes the interplay between dry and moist areas into the game. Yeah, and let's take a closer look at this second term, the so-called surplus term, as he was denoted by Bjerknes in his paper. And the situation is basically, this is the moist adiabatic T profile, which corresponds to this GS, and this is the dry one, which corresponds to this GU, and then you have your actual temperature, which is somewhere in between. And the geometric interpretation of these two integrals is basically, these are these two distances. And when this term in total is positive, you can gain a small amount of convective motion out of your heat, which is set free by condensation. And the condition for that is that this term B, this integral B, has to be larger than M prime divided by M times this other integral A. And since A and B are usually very close together, it means that M prime divided by M has to go very small. And the geometric, or the consequence for the clouds, is then that we will have very narrow cloud columns in which the moist air is moving up, and then we have large broad areas in between, in which the air, which is then unsaturated, can again slowly move downward. And this is exactly the way in which we are able to sustain and to initiate a kind of convective motion in such a conditionally unstable regime. So before I come in, I'm coming to the full numerical simulations, I would like to talk a little bit about some studies which we have actually done in a small Fourier-Galerkin model for particularly this regime, and which are basically impossible to do in a full DNS study. It turns out that this system has a very interesting properties to get into a state of convection, and this is just shown here in this figure, in which we have conducted very much in the spirit of the statistical studies as they have been done in shear flows. Björn has talked about this 2 days ago. So this this red line here is exactly this threshold, and left of it, we will always trigger a turbulent state or a convective state. Let's say a convective state. The Rayleigh numbers are rather small, as you can see, 10 to 4 of the order. And for different aspect ratios, we can see now that in dependence on the initial amplitude of the perturbation, the system goes into a convective state or not. And this is very much, this is at the first glance very similar to what we know from from the transition to turbulence in shear flows. So here it is the strong stratification of the drive field which somehow causes these properties in our system. And now you can do a statistical analysis very much in the spirit of the shear flow investigations. And so you can generate initial conditions at the same energy shell at different shape, and you can look how big is the probability to get to trigger convective states or not. And then you will see that you are increasing now the degree of stable stratification in your system. At a certain stage, you are reaching a point which is not this one, which is more closer to here, beyond which it is not possible to trigger any convective motion anymore. On top of that, this whole thing depends on the aspect ratio. As you can imagine, if you're making your box too small, the convective state cannot grow. There's not enough space outside of these moist plumes, which allows to close this convective loop, which I have tried to explain on the last slide. There are certain differences. We know that in shear flows, these states are transient states for sufficiently small Rayleigh numbers. In our case, we either have a die-out of the state, or we have a convective state, which we will also see for the DNS later. And what we also did is we were interested in this particular state, which how is the state looking, which we are having here. And so what we applied are basically also these techniques which are known from the shear flow cases, these so-called edge states, which are sitting right at the boundary in terms of the phase space, at the phase space boundary between the equilibrium, quiescent equilibrium state, and between such a convective state. And what you are doing is basically you're taking initial conditions which are a mixture of these two fixed points, and then you are varying lambda, and you are refining this successfully, and this is shown here as a function of the kinetic energy. And so you are able to really trace down such states for a given parameter setting. There are, however, differences to our view to the plane shear flow case. I have adapted this figure from the paper by Skufka, Yorke, and Eckhart, appeared a couple of years ago, where they, for the first time, were developing this edge state concept. And we know in the shear flow case, we have this strange repeller, and we have the laminar state, and then we have this complex-shaped boundary between both regions of the phase space, which you are sampling in a very irregular way when you are just varying your parameters of your flow. And in our case, we think that these are rather two attractors which are coexisting in the phase space. We have, in addition, so what do we see? We have a sensitive dependence of the transition on the initial perturbation amplitude. That's similar to the shear flow case. It depends crucially on the aspect ratio, as we will see a little bit later. And the difference is really this one. So we never have transient patterns. So it's always either convection is triggered or not.
Just this question about the terminology, if you go back there. So if you have two attractors, then it's not an S state anymore, right? It's a,
well, it's a boundary, or yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So here we want. So we have repeated the analysis in the same spirit for our DNS, and as you can imagine, there it's much more complicated, and we could go up in the aspect ratios from 4 up to 64. And then could walk along these two lines here in this parameter plane, and indeed we detect again for the same shape of the perturbation that it either goes into a convection state in red or it goes into a laminar state. I mean, it's clear that we are not able to reproduce this very fine parameter plane, which is possible in the LODI model. But nevertheless, we see the same features and properties in these numerical simulations. And we also see if the aspect ratio is too small, and here the Rayleigh number is larger than in this Galerkin model by a factor of 10, then there is no way in the system to really develop a convective state. So this boundary is a very sharp boundary in that case. So now you can explore the parameter space. And we go along this line first, which is exactly this Kuo-Bretherton case where it is neither saturated nor subsaturated. And then we see interesting phenomena. We see a so-called recharge-discharge convection, which actually always happens exactly at the diffusive time unit. So we have rescaled the time here by the diffusive time unit in our system, and then it's like a bursting of the system, and then the system relaxes again. And we see this is a rather stable phenomenon. These are 50 different runs at 50 different amplitudes for the small aspect ratio. So we see this highly intermittent state. Then when the system becomes larger, it gets into a oscillating mode, and then eventually we have a fully developed turbulent state. How does that turbulent state look like? It looks like this. These are the clouds viewed from the top in our system. This is the aspect ratio 64. So the cloud boundaries are these shapes here, and actually the contours below that is the M field, the moist buoyancy field. And we see where this moist buoyancy field gets its maxima, this is exactly where we have the clouds, where we have air moving up strongly localized, and we have a rather ambient regions in between. And this is a kind of convection which is very much different to what we know from classical dry convection, because there the whole space would be filled with these structures and they never would appear in such a strongly localized way as we have them here in our system. So just to zoom into such a system, so it's like a turbulent spot, yeah, in some sense, if we are thinking about analogies to the shear flows. So we have, this is the velocity field in the mid-plane. Again, this is the cloud boundary here. So that means it is exactly all points which are enclosed by this boundary. The air saturated, and we have these up and down drafts which are here indicated as a color, as a vertical component. So now interesting things are happening if you are now studying systematically the aspect ratio Rayleigh number dependence, and that is the best which we could do here in terms of the Rayleigh numbers. Everything which is blue is an instantaneous snapshot of the cloud patterns. So we see at a given Rayleigh number that, oh, I have to rush a little bit, that there are more and more clouds evolving when we are making the box bigger. But if you are going in this direction, it's very interesting. You see that you need larger and larger boxes to generate one of these localized aggregates. That means the clouds in our model need more, or the cloud aggregates need more and more space outside for increasing Rayleigh number to get into a mode of sustained convection. So what does that mean? Well, I'm coming back to this a little bit later. Now we went along this, we went along these lines, and as I said already, we have we observe the transition to convection and the return to the laminar state as it is sketched here by the kinetic energies. And the more you go to the right, which means the stronger the stable stratification is, the less turbulent, the less turbulent fluctuations are in the cloud aggregates. So the turbulent kinetic energy also decreases in the amplitude, and we also studied the root mean square fluctuations inside the clouds. And what is more importantly also in terms of the transport, the mean velocity, which is always upward inside the clouds, decreases in the amplitude if you are increasing the Rayleigh number, and also outside it decreases the amplitude of the downward velocity outside. So it means it looks like that when we are increasing the Rayleigh number in our system, this whole process decreases in the amplitude. There is weaker upward transport in a broader area, and there is much weaker slow subsidence outside of these localized aggregates. So that indicates that in this model we probably reach some high Rayleigh number limit where it is impossible to initiate or to sustain such a structure. And this is now exactly the point where one has to think about the next extensions of this model. So in this simplified setting, it is now, we see some trends with the Rayleigh number. Final, then I skip this one. Okay, I have basically said everything here already. I just want to show these two figures once more. Same Rayleigh number here, stably stratified dry field and unstably stratified dry field, and you see the liquid water content patterns are completely different. Highly localized in that case, which I talked about, and that was the so-called linearly unstable regime. Okay, good.
Can I use my question time for you to go one slide back? I noticed you had something on large eddy simulations.
This is a very popular LES code, the so-called SEM code, and this is a much more complex simulation. They have precipitation, they have radiation included, everything, yeah, and also the boundary conditions are not that that easy or that simple as in our case. Nevertheless, they are also seeing this aggregation to such a large scale structure, which we already observe in this very simple model. Yeah. The model has its limits, but for sure. But nevertheless, I mean, we can now stepwise crank up the complexity, and that's what we will do.
On your top yeah? boundary, you have a lid, right? You have a solid.
Sorry?
What is the effect of that as opposed to, I assume these people have more like that?
Yeah, they have much more, they have basically some kind of outflow boundary. They allow for gravity waves and everything, which we are not doing. In that sense, it's hard to compare. I mean, it's we have a much simpler setup here.
But your clouds form significant enough away from the top surface?
They are always forming in the upper part of the layer.
More questions?
Simple-minded question. I mean, can you also deal with the system just consisting of cloud only, where you sort of in the super saturated case,
yes,
and you sort of use the wet air bath as your corresponding to the isothermal case in Le Lebesgue, and then just increase the slope and go into the super saturated regime so that everything is full of clouds. And then you should come back to say something like ordinary convection.
Right, exactly. The two limiting cases are basically undistinguishable to the classical convection. That's true. Mm-hmm. You're completely right.
No more questions. This is not the case. Let's thank you for more.